Lakeshore Public Radio. On the dial at 89.1 FM and streaming worldwide at lakeshorepublicradio.org. Midwest Beat is a program all about music and the people who make it. Coming up on the second hour, we'll have Matt Easton from a band called The Jenny Thing. They're kind of a proggy alternative band, and they're back together. We'll play music from their new album, American Canyon, and we'll be talking to Matt. But this hour, we're going to take things to a different level, a different sound. We've got an album called Paper Boats, and it's out today. It's a wonderful little album, and I think you're going to enjoy it. James Giraldo is going to be joining us. I think I said that wrong. DiGiralmo. I'm going to ask him himself in just a moment. We are going to play something first, though, to kind of give you a groove of what James sounds like. This is a song that caught my attention. I love the lyrics of it. And I'm really... One of the things that stands out in this song is the muted trumpet. I really like the way the trumpet works in this song. It's called The Girl Who Has Everything. And I think we all know a girl like that. James Giraldo, I think I've got it. James, is that correct?
Hey, how's it going, Tom?
It's going.
It's pretty close. It's like, think of Robert De Niro, right? With the D, like from.
Okay.
In Italian, so Di Girolamo.
Di Girolamo. Okay, yes. Got it. I will not forget it.
I wish I had a cool name like Tom Lounges. Like I wish I were like something like Jimmy Chills or something. That would be. I love the fact that it's like, what is Tom doing? Oh, Tom lounging.
He's lounging. Yes, he is.
That's what he does. That's just what he does.
But this is the first time I'm hearing your music, and I got to say, it's very relaxing. It's very beautiful. As I mentioned, I don't know if you were hearing the beginning of it, but I love the way the flugelhorn and the trumpet work. Elliot Life is playing that. That grabbed me, the accents of that horn with your voice and the beautiful lyrics. I really like the Ming Vaz line, too, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah, that is one of my favorite tunes. It's the oldest song by far on the record. That is a song that I've taken a stab or two at recording over the years, and just kind of, I never felt that I really got it, so I never put it out, and until now. I wrote that about 18 or 19 years ago, with a guy named Daniel Tashin, who is a wonderful singer-songwriter and a producer. He's fantastic. He actually, the two of us, when we wrote that, just getting back to the flugelhorn arrangement, we were definitely consciously thinking about Burt Bacharach at the time.
And, okay.
You know, that really just kind of, that whole style seemed to really kind of occur naturally with the chords I was playing and all that kind of stuff. And we, I mean, obviously, you know, Bert is somebody worthy of imitating when you're kind of coming up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So very weirdly, as life takes its interesting twists and turns, my co-writer, has made a record with Bert recently.
Oh, wow.
It's the first new music that Bert Bacharach has put out in 15 years, and it's with my old buddy Daniel, so it's kind of a fun thing. Bert's stylings definitely informed our writing on that tune, and then very much I decided to take it all the way there with the horn arrangement.
No, did you have a girl who has everything that inspired that song back in the day?
I think that's a good question. I think so. I think it's dangerous to relate a lyric, you know, to say that it was about any one person. That wouldn't be true. But I think maybe it may say more about me than it says about anyone else, but maybe I felt that it was just a good riddle. You know, what if you think this person is just unattainable? What have I got? You know, and so maybe that's where it was coming from.
As I listened to that song, I envisioned credits rolling over the song itself. It sounds like something that should be in a rom-com movie at the tail.
Yeah, preferably a humongous, you know, runaway hit.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, that would be delightful. I'm so pleased. Maybe this will turn out to be a prescient vision on your part.
Okay. What made you want to go into songwriting, and when did this start? And the reason I ask is I read somewhere, and I can't find it right now in the paperwork in front of me, but I read somewhere that you said you didn't really start out to be a songwriter. How did you get on this track, and when did you get on this track? What inspired you to pick up pen to paper or sit at the piano or however it is you write and decide, I'm going to try my hand at this?
I think like most everything else, and I hope some of your listeners will identify with this. But like lots of other things in life, it happened by accident.
Okay.
And without any any real plan or anything on like that on my any grand design on my part. I was very interested in music, of course, and in writing instrumental music, and I thought that I would try to do film scoring. I thought that was going to be my area.
Okay,
that
song makes me think of that then. Maybe that that is some subliminal direction you were heading when you wrote that song.
Yeah, I mean, I think what happened was I was never really going to, I don't think I knew what, in my youth and in my folly, I don't think I really knew what it was going to take to become a film scoring composer. But I've always retained my love of classical music and of, arranging things and using some of the chords I was hearing different composers using and all that kind of stuff, and the, just relationships and so forth. I moved up to New York after college. I got a couple of pieces on TV. It was all work made for hire. I didn't really find it to be, it just didn't turn out the way I planned. Mm-hmm. You know, I was very ambitious, and then I didn't make it very far with that. And so I moved back to Nashville, and basically one thing led to another. It was like, oh, this guy's good enough on keys. Maybe he should be in our band. So I started getting into bands and, you know, just local bands and playing around town. And then I think my love of, you know, the 70s singer songwriter, people that my dad was always playing when I was a kid, I just think that seeped in real deep in my subconscious and started to come out in the form of, you know, in the form of pop song. You know, that was what I think led me to eventually go in this direction. It's been a very long process, and, you know, I would be lying to you if I said I could, you know, break it down in any kind of like really detailed way. It's a little bit of a blur.
Okay. Now, these songs, you mentioned The Girl Who Has Everything is an old song. Are the rest of them on here relatively new?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Are these like COVID-era songs that you wrote while you were woodshedding?
I think most of them, I think that is the case. But, for example, Same Boat definitely predates the COVID era.
Okay.
And, of course, it's taken on a much different meaning. It's definitely taken on some new layers of meaning, I should say, you know, but the rest are pretty new. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's play that one. Let's play Same Boat. This is a song that, as you mentioned, listening to it today after everything in the past year and the marches and the pandemic and everything, I like the reference about if we're ever going to get anywhere, we got to row together. You know, we're not row against each other. And I think those lyrics are pretty profound in a very beautiful setting. So let's play that for the listeners. This is Same Boat. This is the lead track on the new album, Paper Boats. And we'll be back with James after this.
We're gonna be in the same boat. be in the same boat. Let's start rowing if we're gonna get where.
Getting a little funk going there. Maybe one day you'll join us. Mr. James DiGirolamo is the composer, piano player, vocalist, guy behind that song. He is my guest today here on Midwest Beats, and I do like that funky groove, James.
Thanks. Yeah, that song is kind of a mixture of lots of different styles. Maybe somewhat uncomfortably so, but I kind of like it. It's if it's a cooperation anthem, you know, let's call it, then it kind of makes sense to kind of bring together a bunch of disparate styles and put them, just kind of have it be a big melting pot of style.
You mentioned that it was written before the pandemic, one of the newer songs. And that the message certainly has changed. You listen to it now and it really strikes home. What was the message you were trying to convey? What was the source behind that song when you first wrote it that has lent itself so well to post-pandemic life?
Yeah, I think I didn't have any kind of grandiose vision. I'm probably going to contradict myself immediately, but I think that the main thing with that tune was, sometimes you sit down and you start to play a new idea on a piano or on a guitar, and sometimes you get nothing, and sometimes you play and you find some nice direction, and then on top of that, sometimes you get a couple of words or a phrase that will occur to you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've practiced the process of writing songs, you know, many, many times, you know, hundreds at least, and maybe thousands of times, this starts to be possible. You know, you can do something very quickly. You can, you know, you hear those stories about, you know, Elton John writing something in 15 minutes. It's like, absolutely. So the thing is about having an idea occur to you is sometimes you get really tempted to censor yourself right away. Like, that's not good enough, or that's silly, or that's the dumbest idea I ever heard, something like that. You can get really, really inside your own head. And in any case, in this instance, I'm really glad that I didn't do that, because I think the main lines about, if we're going to be in the same boat, let's start rowing, and if we're going to get where we're going, we've got to learn to row together. I think that I was afraid, right after I got, that's the first part of the song that I got, and I think I was afraid immediately that it was going to sound trite and that it was going to sound simplistic and that I was going to sound, you know, like a naive dreamer or something.
Mm-hmm.
And, but then I kind of thought, you know what, well, there's no law that says that any, you know, 4 minute pop song has to be like the end all, you know, it has to be say everything about a particular subject.
Right.
Why not just allow myself to write this thing that's very optimistic and it's, yes, it's very broad and sweeping in general. I don't list the policy, items that it's going to take to get there in the verses or anything. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that would be really tedious too. So I just got out of my own way. I thought this is a happy song about people, all kinds of people trying to solve big problems. And, of course we had plenty of big problems before the pandemic struck.
Right.
So,
right.
And yeah, I think that's where I was coming from.
I think everyone can relate to that. And by doing it in a broad swath, so to speak, you open it up to more people being able to put their own interpretations on it. What does he mean by this? Well, I think I can apply this to this in my life or that in my life.
And of course, if everybody if everybody in the whole world thought of small ways they could make stuff better in their own life, starting at home, then the world would change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it would become a better place.
I was going to ask you, you mentioned by getting out of your own way, you are the kind of artist, if I'm reading all your credits and stuff right on the sheet here, you self-produce, you write, you engineer, you do everything. How do you not get too close to the song as the writer, as the performer, as the arranger, as the producer? You know, you mentioned about not wanting to get in your own way, and you successfully did that with Same Boat. How do you deal with that on a regular basis, since you are pretty much, you know, the CEO and the janitor when it comes to making the songs?
Yeah, that's a great analogy, the CEO and the janitor. I love that. And it's absolutely true. And the frank answer is sometimes I don't succeed. Sometimes I do get too close to it, and sometimes I just, you know, it goes by so many times. Like, for example, on Same Boat, I brought in a better bass player than myself on that.
Okay.
And Paul Arndt. And I didn't play the horn, the horns. I played everything else. And that can really be like, oh my goodness, going back to do another pass on, you know, on drums or on a percussion instrument, you name it, or on guitar, as is the case in several of the other songs where I played all of the instruments.
Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, trying to make sonic decisions and all that, you really can get wrapped up and get too close to it and get to the point where you're like, I don't know if this is good anymore.
At that point, do you have someone you can count on to, they say, hey, Joe, listen to this. What do you think? And be honest. Yeah. I mean, do you have people you can bounce things off of?
I do. Yeah. And that's always a good thing. And then maybe even more important than that is to just get away from it. If you feel like you can't hear it anymore, you should probably take a long break and work on something else, if at all possible. And I find a lot of times you come back to something that you thought was just rubbish while you were in that state, and you take a couple of weeks and then listen to it again. It's,
mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. I know what I was doing wrong. Or, oh, this is great. I didn't have to do anything differently. This was perfect. I'm an idiot. I just needed to take a break. So there's that.
Let's do a song called Pure Joy. I believe this is the fourth one on the album, and this is one that also has a lot of commercial appeal. Is there a story behind this?
I like the sound of that, Tom.
All right. I mean, I know this is this is really good for like a triple A, perhaps, or even ambient radio or NPR. Yeah. Certainly, we embrace this sound. Yeah. Is there a story behind Pure Joy?
Yeah, absolutely. This is one of my favorite songs on the album. And incidentally, it's one I played everything on. Okay. A good example of that. And then there's a guy named Lex Price who mixed it. He's a great multi-instrumentalist and a great producer and mixer himself. So thankfully, I didn't have to cope with that aspect of this one. But the story behind writing it is really real simple. I was just sitting at the piano, and I've become a little bit of a bird nut. Like a bird watcher type.
Okay.
I've just gotten fascinated. There was an article in the Washington Post, I forget who wrote it, maybe a year ago, that said the birds left me, something to the effect of the birds left me no choice. Like I was indifferent, but then I just started to pay attention, and now I'm a bird nut. So there's that. So I'm sitting at the piano, and I'm listening to all of these bird songs outside, and I'm not going to tell you that, they handed me down this exact melody, but there was all this stuff in the air, and I started kind of picking out notes on the piano, and then I stumbled onto the opening melody. And the moment that I stumbled onto the opening melody, that magical thing that I was just talking about a moment ago,
mm-hmm.
started to happen where the way the melody tumbled out, it suggested certain words, a certain couple of phrases. And once that started to happen, I thought, well, what am I describing here? Like, well, it's just a state of pure joy. And so I thought, wow, pure joy. What a great hook for the chorus. So this is one of those ones that just came together really quickly like that. And I think, you could call that inspiration. You could call that a lot of different things, or luck, or a little bit of both. But I really feel like it's a weird thing to say, but I feel pretty well perpetually inspired. And that's a high privilege to be able to say you feel that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's play this. This is one of my favorites off the EP. And again, the EP is called Paper Boats, and I believe it's out today. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. The whole thing is out in all the streaming outlets and on iTunes and all that kind of jazz.
All right. Well, let's play it. Let's check it out. We'll be back with James on the other side.
Bye.
James DiGirolamo, that is a brand new song off his album Paper Boats, released today, called Pure Joy. And James, I got to say, I'm loving that tune. I hear it succeeding at AC Radio, maybe reaching over to AAA in some stations, and certainly smooth ambient songs, NPR. I think if that one becomes the hit, I think it could be. You're going to have to give some extra bird seed to those birds.
Yes.
Share the publishing.
That's right. First on my list, the bird. And it's we use as you hear it in the introduction, I taped some of them just because it was just too, I couldn't pass it up, you know.
I love that because you can hear it really well when you got your headphones on. Not as much if you're just in a room, but I heard that and I'm like, oh my God, he's got the birds between the beats.
Yeah, why not have a little field recording of the critters that helped inspire it?
That song, the way your voice worked, it was like you were almost harmonizing with yourself. The effect, whatever you had put on your voice, especially toward the end, it reminded me a lot of let's say Al Stewart and Time Passages.
Oh.
A song like Time Passages. Even a little bit of McCartney in there. That song just really seems to draw from a variety of influences. Is there any particular songwriters that you, I don't want to say emulate, but that you might be influenced by?
Oh, sure. That one, funny, I haven't heard Al Stewart yet, and that's cool. McCartney, for sure. And I think maybe that last one has got a bit of, you know, and of course it's all run through the, you know, another entire human being, so it's not going to necessarily come out on the other side sounding like anybody except myself.
Mm-hmm.
But quite a bit of Andy Partridge from XTC.
Ooh, okay.
The sort of stuff that he in his later period, you know, was writing and still is writing. There's a little bit of that. There's probably a little wee pinch of Elvis Costello in there too.
Okay, latter day Elvis. Latter day Elvis.
Maybe middle period Elvis.
Okay.
And there's probably a little bit of Beach Boys in there, believe it or not.
I could believe that. I can hear that.
Yeah. And I don't think any of these things. I mean, I never sit down and say, "Now I will write a Beach Boys song." You know, I don't.
Right.
I don't know if anyone does that. I hope not. These things just kind of seep out. And in fact, the challenge is to, over the years, there's so many great songwriters and great artists, and you can really end up in trouble when you do nothing but imitate. It can really stunt your development yourself. You know, I think I went through a period like that where I was emulating to a fault, and it just took a really long time for me to shake that off and to kind of become my own, you know, my own self as a recording artist.
Mm-hmm. When you do sit down to write, what is the process? Are you a lyricist first? Do you come up with the melody at the piano, and do you always write on the piano? Because I know you play multiple instruments.
Yeah, that's it's interesting. Most of these were written on the guitar.
Okay.
I think On Paper and Girl Who Has Everything were both written on the piano. And over the years, what's happened is that I think I stopped writing on the piano on purpose for quite a long time because there was always the pressure or the temptation, maybe those two things, even though they're somewhat contradictory, kind of go together. It's like, it's a bit of a loaded thing. It's like pressure to be a interesting accompaniment in the moment. And that's not the most, that doesn't help with the writing process, I've found.
Mm-hmm.
What helps with the writing process is to make something just as simple as possible. And so I think I started to just get on the guitar to write. And that was actually a very good limitation for me, like a purposeful willful limitations, sometimes it helps you get even more creative. Okay. And really relieved that particular pressure. And then as far as process goes, or as far as lyrics first or music first, that's just always surprising. There are plenty of times where I get words first, plenty of times where I get music first, and plenty of times where they seemingly come out together almost fully formed in a really, really weird way. Pure Joy is a great example of that last case where they both just kind of tumble out, and then you find yourself just jockeying between, you know, a word or a new piece of bit of music, and they just kind of like almost seem to form each other as you go. Mm-hmm. It's a fascinating thing when it happens. You know, I wish it happened every day.
With Pure Joy, it was, as you mentioned, you're listening to the birds. It was like an epiphany of how wonderful everything felt in that moment, and you captured it. Normally,
yeah.
What inspires you to write? What is, I mean, that was one instance. Let's say with other songs, how do you pull a subject matter out and say, you know, I think I'm going to write about this, or I think I'm going to add something about this topic? Where does that come from? And is it hard to find that, or does it just flow and come natural? Some people have that block, and other people are disciplined writers where they can say, okay, I'm going to get up, like Randy Newman. He said, I'll get up and I'll sit down from 10 o'clock in the morning until 2 in the afternoon, I'll write 3 songs.
Right.
I don't know how someone can do that, but I mean, supposedly that's how he works.
Yeah, and he is in a class by himself of a certain kind of song. I'm thinking especially of the records he put out throughout the 70s, which I could do an hour on Randy Newman alone. He's incredible. I think the answer in my case is I don't decide. Usually, I don't decide. Almost in every case, it's just, and you've heard people say this before, it's just, I write from the subconscious. So I don't sit down and go, oh, now I'm going to dredge up something from my subconscious. I just let that happen. You know, I don't necessarily write a sad song when I'm feeling sad. I don't necessarily write a happy song when I'm feeling happy. It does line up sometimes, but it could just as easily be that phrase or a particular mode of music or whatever it is, or a certain atmosphere could occur to me and suggest a topic. I think if you just get used to putting yourself, kind of aligning yourself mentally and psychologically, things can just kind of, you can kind of, that can start to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's a great answer, but that's kind of what happens for me. It's a little bit mysterious to me, even, you know?
There's another song that is unique, and that's what I like about, my favorite albums are the ones where this first song doesn't sound like the last one, doesn't sound like the middle one. They flow, the sequencing. I'm very appreciative of artists that take time in the sequencing, the placement of songs, and what works together without being necessarily the lead in, but it just flows. And one that stands out on here, and it's got a different sound, is Top of the World. You can hear the banjo in there. It's got a different groove, a different texture. Let's play that, but first tell me about how Top of the World came out.
Yeah, Top of the World, I had the beginnings of, I had quite a bit of the verse written, and I kind of stumbled part of the way into the chorus.
Okay.
And I just couldn't quite, I don't know, I felt like I wanted to take it further than what I was able to do on my own. And I rang up a buddy of mine whose records I've played on, named Robbie Hecht, who's a fantastic singer, songwriter, and an incredible singer. He's the type of singer where the moment he opens his mouth, just based on his singing voice, you're already paying attention. You know?
Okay. Now, does he sing with you on this?
No, he doesn't. No, he doesn't appear on the song itself, which would have been so great if that had been possible. But we wrote it together, and he improved it greatly and helped take take it to a new place, especially in the chorus. And then we wrote that next verse together, and I'm just delighted with how it turned out. And then part of the reason it sounds a bit different or has a different atmosphere is because it was recorded on the same day as the tracking session for Girl Who Has Everything over at Joe Passapia's studio. And he's another Nashville, like, he's Northeastern originally, but he's been in Nashville for a really, really long time. Great guitar player, great producer, great multi-instrumentalist. He's been with Katie Lang, Guster, all kinds of different people over the years. He's tremendous. And we recorded that. So the guy I mentioned earlier, Lex Price, the three of us basically went in to Joe's studio on those two songs. And so that's why Top of the World sounds a bit different. Joe played that wonderful banjo part that is, it's felt maybe even more than heard. And I love the kind of sort of a happy song, but it's tinged with sadness maybe, or just informed by past sorrow. And it has a kind of a spooky atmosphere in a way, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does have a little bit of that. Let's play that. This is Top of the World. And again, this is new music, came out today. Paper Boats is the album. Stay with us. Thank you. James DiGirolamo and Top of the World, new music off Paper Boats, out today. Again, a unique song. James is my guest today. And on that song, James, I asked earlier if Robbie had sang with you because of the harmonizing there. Is that you just multi-tracking your vocals?
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Thanks so much. Yeah, I really appreciate that. That high part in the look at all the tiny people down in that scale model town. That was a fun part to sing, and it's really funny. I kept on wanting to hear more and more and more and more of it to the point where it almost overwhelmed the melody. But thank you.
And what's interesting too is the rhythm in that. It almost has a Celtic march kind of feel to it, the drum rhythm behind it. I kept, like, my feet kept moving in almost a marching sense when I was listening to that, and it had a Celtic groove to it. And I don't know if that was because of the accordion that's added in there that almost sounds like a harmonica at times. Interesting the way you've worked the music together on that.
Thanks. The marching aspect is most likely due to the fact that I played drums on it, which is I didn't sit behind a drum kit on that. I actually just we had a large bass drum, and as I recall, it was actually turned 90 degrees, like actually just kind of like facing the floor, if I remember correctly.
Okay,
and then the snare drum with the snare turned off. And a bunch of stuff sitting on top of it. Actually, I think it might even have been a tom now, with a bunch of things that were just happened to be sitting on top. And we were just getting sounds up, and I was playing this drum with a mallet, and all that stuff that was sitting on top of the snare drum just rattled around. And the guys in the control room were like, "That's it. That's, you know, that sounds like a parody of a, studio movie where they do all kinds of ridiculous things and some guy yells, "That's it." But anyway, that is what happened. I'm happy to hear that it kind of created an interesting atmosphere.
And again, a complete different sound from other songs we've played. Every track is in its own, has its own personality, its own groove, its own sound. That said, what are you going to do now that the album's out and it's ready to promote? Are you going on the road? Do you tour as an ensemble? Do you have any kind of accompaniment? Is it a one-man show? How do you get the music out there now?
I think I'm going to start booking a bunch of shows just myself.
Piano, guitar,
guitar in the short run, because it's so. I mean, I won't rule out using a piano at times, but I just think there's something really lightweight, portable, and straightforward, and it's just more conducive, I think. Just walk in with a guitar and play a handful of songs. I'm not going to start out, headlining anyway. So I'll be opening for folks, and that's just a great way to do it. Just really stripped down.
So are you looking to just work around Nashville, or actually get out on the road and rent a bus, or do some flyout dates, or what's the geographical scope of what you want to do with this tour?
Well, I think I'm going to start. Yeah, I'm going to start local and see where it takes me. I really don't have any expectations. So, in a good way. I mean, I would love to do as much as I possibly can. I would love to go on a full-fledged tour. That'd be wonderful. Mm-hmm. So I don't mean to say I don't have any expectations in that, I'm not going to aim for, as high as I can. But I think it's helpful in order to just avoid, being disappointed in life, not to necessarily have any hardcore expectations about what a thing is going to be. So my intention is to just play shows and see where it goes.
Okay. How does the listening audience and your fan base that is now, I'm sure, growing by the minute as we play more of these songs, how do they reach you? How do they follow you and find out about dates and find out about other things pertaining to your career?
Yeah, the best place to go is just straight to my website, which is jamesdigirolamo.com.
All right, jamesdigirolamo.com, and that is D-I-G-I-R-O-L-A-M-O, and it's the place to go. And one thing I do want to touch on, I love the cover. I have a couple of record stores, and we have one of them by a lake, and we get a male and female mallard that comes strolling down our street, and actually will walk into our store and come up to the counter. Cool. And then they turn around like, oh, we don't really want to buy records. And they'll turn around and walk out. But your album cover, for the listeners, it's got a duck on the sidewalk just kind of moseying around.
It was in Indiana, too. It was in Indianapolis.
Really? Wow.
I kid you not. And what's doubly funny about it is that I took this image from, I made a little iPhone video of this duck. My friend and I were walking along behind it, and we were just, you know, we were cracking up, but it was also, you know, it was funny, it was adorable, it was a little bit sad. It was all of these things wrapped up together. You know, at first it was like, oh, how charming, there's this duck, and then I thought, like, oh my God, this poor thing is like, has this entire city to cope with now, you know, and all of us people and cars and all the craziness. And anyway, so yeah, I just, something about that jumped out at me when I was going to make a trailer for Song Pure Joy. And now I've expanded that into a video, which I just put on my Instagram today. But so I actually took this image from a video and made that cover art. So yeah, I'm delighted that you have this strong affinity for this poor duck's plight.
I do. I feel so bad for the, and if this one's alone, at least mine has a companion.
Right. Yes.
Poor guy.
Yeah. Poor guy. But I hope he made it.
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk one more bit about songwriting, and that is most of these are songs that you have written on your own. You have collaborated a little bit with Robbie, and I think there was another one that you collaborated with on
with Daniel. Yeah.
Are you looking to collaborate more? Are you more comfortable when you are self-contained?
I would do as much as I can possibly do. Yeah. Whoever I can write with, I'd be delighted to give it a shot. I'm comfortable writing on my own, and there's pluses and minuses about that. But I love co-writing too.
Well, you're certainly in a place where there's a lot of good writers and musicians being in Nashville. And you mentioned going from New York to Nashville. Where are you originally from?
I'm from outside of Philadelphia originally.
Okay. City of brotherly love?
Yeah. And I've lived in New Jersey. I've lived in Virginia. I went to school here in Nashville, and then I moved up to New York when I was in my early 20s and took a stab at the, you know, post-scoring for film and TV. And but I've been back here in the Nashville area since 1995. So it's by far the longest period that I've lived anywhere, and it's home.
All right. Is there anything we haven't talked about that you'd like to let listeners know about your music, yourself?
Jeez, I don't know. I just I hope everybody enjoys listening to the record.
All right. We're going to play one more to get out. There's only two we haven't played, On Paper and Sail Away. What would you prefer us to close out with?
Oh, hit him with Sail Away. I love On Paper, too. I don't think you could go wrong, but yeah.
All right, we're going to close out with that. James, thank you so much for joining us and giving us your time today.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much, Tom. I appreciate it.
And keep the music coming. We'll keep playing it. We'd love to have you back next time you have something out.
That'd be awesome.
And
look forward to it.
If you make it to Indiana, definitely have have your publicist get a hold of me and tell me where you're going to be in Northwest Indiana, Chicago. Maybe we'll be able to do something together, either in a live venue or have you come to the record store, do some signings, things like that.
Oh, I would love it.
All right. Thank you.
Terrific. Thank you, Tom.
We will play a final song now. This is, again, from Paper Boats. It's out. Check it out. This is Sail Away. Stay with me. Another hour coming up.
I adore you, always want more of you. Sail away to distant shores with you. Rent a couple of bikes, ride the tops of the dikes with you. Sorry, what's that? You turn your head and laugh. The wind whips your hair black. I was always holding out hope for you. Gazing through my trusty telescope for you. Riding the waves, words I wanna say.
With him, and we'd sailed away indeed. James DiGirolamo and his newest songs, Sail Away is the name of that one. It's off his latest album, Paper Boats. It came out today. Look for it online, and look for him online as well to follow with his shows and different events that he's doing as he gets ready to promote this album. Again, James DiGirolamo. Great singer-songwriter. I have never been aware of him before, so I'm very grateful that we had a chance to get him on and that someone turned me on to his music. And we're going to keep the show going. And again, the person that turned me on to his music is Wendy Byford Jones, and she is the publicist that has set this up, and I do appreciate her for all she does.